Hey, it's Tony. On today's show, we're going to talk to Chuck Culpepper to preview the men's Final Four. And then we're going to talk to Pam Ward to preview the women's Final Four. We're sort of locked into the Final Fours today, but first, commerce.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Just before we went on the air, I said to Sally, anticipating that she would be at the Women's Final Four, "Are you in Cleveland?" And she said to me, and I quote, "I'm in Hershey, Pennsylvania." And I said, "You going on the rides?" Because, I mean, we took the kids to Hershey. We saw more tattoos per person 35 years ago than I ever imagined possible. And after 20 minutes, the chocolate began to make me wheeze. What are you doing in Hershey? What?
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
Have no fear. Sally is in Cleveland now. She wrote a story in the Post today with a Cleveland Dateline. So she got to Cleveland safely, which is good. We're going to do both Final Fours today. We're going to have Chuck Culpepper on to talk about the men's Final Four. We're going to have Pam Ward on to talk about the women's Final Four. There are some stories that happened, sports stories of consequence, that happened in the last couple of days since we have done the podcast. For example, Stephon Diggs, a number one wide receiver, was traded out of Buffalo to Houston, making Josh Allen's role in Buffalo much harder and making C.J. Stroud's role in Houston much easier. Unless it's Stephon Diggs has reached that point in his career where he's simply a malcontent. He was not happy.
Careful
when he
what
was,
you tweet.
He was not happy in Minnesota. Clearly, he wasn't all that happy in Buffalo. And his brother had gone on social media, Trayvon, and said, you know, you got to get out of there. So everybody sort of saw this coming. But to trade Diggs and two draft picks and only get back a second-round pick, boy, it's hard for me to understand why Buffalo would do that, unless Diggs said to him, and this we don't know, it hasn't come out yet, not really good reporting on this, unless Diggs said to them, "I don't care what you do, I'm not reporting. I'm done here."
Yeah, then
I'm
you have here. To get so something. Deal.
That was a big story. The Milwaukee Bucks are horrendous. Doc Rivers, they fired a guy who was his coaching record was 30-13. That's plus 17 halfway through the season. They fired him to bring in Doc Rivers. An interim coached three games and went 2-1. So the two people before Doc Rivers who had coached the Milwaukee Bucks each had a winning record, albeit one was very small, 2-1. Doc Rivers is now 15-15. That's terrible. And he's lost games in succession to Washington and to Memphis, whose combined records 71 games under 500. 71 under. They stink. They're two of the five worst teams in the league. Washington's the second worst team in the league by the record. By the record. That's a story. Then there's the great sweat stains uniform story that we did yesterday, that these cheap, junky uniforms that Nike, they leased it
outsourced
out to
Fanatics.
Fanatics.
Yes.
So Fanatics actually produced them?
Yes.
And the baseball players hate them. They hate the small numbers. They hate the small names. They hate the lack of tailoring. It's not individually tailored. And they think they're cheap. They feel and look cheap. Now they retain sweat stains to such a degree that players are embarrassed to wear the uniforms. Nike said they're testing the uniforms. What I said yesterday on the show was I would test them by throwing them in the garbage. Get yet last year's uniforms, right?
Yep. Again, I think the best tweet early on when they saw this, it looked like a knockoff jersey that you pick up from a TJ Maxx.
Yeah, it's just junk, or as Wilbon would call it, hocus pocus junk.
Right. How can they let that happen?
I don't know.
Just wait for the Philly City Connect. It'll save everything.
That'll look bad. It'll be all sweaty. Mm-hmm. It'll look like Levitard's closet. And all of these things are important, but not as important as what we're going to talk about now. That's our friend Steve Sands. Steve Sands texted me, I don't know, 4 or 5 days ago.
Steve Sands, middle of the pack of our Bigs Bracket Challenge. He's sitting at position number 9, but he does have UConn, so he has a path.
So is it a chance to win or a chance to just place?
A chance to place. He is okay. Behind most others, you know, Greg, Feinsand. The Braun family
just
positions 1 and 2 still, yes.
Wow, look
so,
at that.
You know, they look, and they both have UConn?
They both have Purdue.
Oh, they both have Purdue.
But the max total for Spike is significantly higher than SG3.
Yeah. Gary would be happy if Spike wins.
Sure.
You know, Spike was just accepted into some sort of special program, some sort of sports thing.
Wow.
Gary wrote me an email about it. Yeah. Yeah, it's great.
He's dominated this tournament the last few years.
He has the credentials to do it.
He has a system.
Which leads me to Steve Sands' son, Scott. Steve Sands' son, Scott, is a little bit ahead of Spike in college. Spike's a freshman or a sophomore, and Scott Sands is a junior. So Steve Sands, wrote me a note and said, does PTI have interns? Because I'd like to get an internship for my son. And I think since the pandemic, PTI does not have interns, but I'm not certain about this, or as I used to call them, Cliffies. When they reported to the show, I said, look, we're going to make this very easy for me. I'm never going to remember your name. So I'm just going to call you Cliffy. Is that okay? Boys and girls, you're all Cliffy.
And eventually you become your daughter-in-law.
Right. That's one of them. Right. That's true. So they're just Cliffies. So I said to Kelleher, do we have any Cliffies? And he said, no, we don't have it anymore. So I went back to Sands and I said, you know, this podcast, we could have an intern. And Sands said, well, what would the intern do? And I said, I don't know, get the bagels, take abuse on the air. I don't know. I mean, I can
tell you what he won't do.
You know, he won't get paid.
Drive my kids to summer camp.
No, he's not, right. He's not,
right.
Right. That's right. So I don't, you know, I'm happy to do this. So how are we feeling about this? Now, the thing is that what Sands has to know, and the kid is a junior at Indiana.
Yes.
What's he majoring in? Some dopey thing.
Sports marketing.
Just
something
so
like that.
Foolish. It's yes. So foolish. The people that do this. Millions of kids major in this for the 11 jobs that exist that are already filled by people in their 20s who are not going anywhere.
Right.
Anyway. So as they say in you can't always get what you want. And, you know, I went down to get my fair share of abuse. I mean, that's what would happen with Scott Sands. I mean, we've done this with Nick Feynman. We've done this with other people. We just abuse them. We make fun of them on the air. We let them talk and then make fun of how terrible they are on the air. And then they end up producing the Today Show.
Like,
right.
Yes, you know,
like
yes.
They end up doing
Feynman,
that.
Yes.
So it's a wonderful internship, but it's not a formal internship. So this is what I haven't gotten to with Sands.
I'm already on Amazon looking up air inflatable dancers so we can just have them out on the highway promoting the show.
Yes. There you go.
Or a sign turner.
Yeah, sign spinner. Turner. Yeah, we need
something
one of those.
Like that. We would send him to do all those things we think would embarrass kids. That's what we would send him to do and take pictures of it to send to his parents. That's what we would do. But if there's anything that says, oh, no, 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 you have to... Like if Indiana University...
Formal paperwork.
Where, by the way, your godfather went.
Really?
Indiana University. He's a graduate of Indiana University. Yeah, fine school, Indiana. If that happens, if there's formal paperwork that we have to do for Sands' kid, we're not doing that. We're not doing that at all.
Well,
we're not lifting a finger...
And a summer review by Tony Kornheiser.
Except to make fun of this kid.
Yeah, well...
Now, and we're going to love him. We're going to love them.
Of course we will.
We love all of our interns.
Yes.
We love them.
So I have...
But that, it would be the most fun... one of the most fun internships in the world.
Oh, yes.
It's raining. Go get hot bagels. Don't take the bagels that aren't hot. Make sure they're hot bagels.
They can help you with parking at Calvert-Woodley.
Yeah.
That is something.
Yeah, pick me up 6 bottles of wine. Yeah.
The old world red. They know what I like.
But he can do that. And he would stay with his relatives... He'd stay here with his relatives because the family owns Calvert Woodley.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
So I
say, go out there and hold that parking spot for me. I'll be there in 2 hours.
Yeah, just stay there with a cone.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I have a 2 p.m.
I'd love to see the kid spin a sign.
Oh, yeah.
Tony Kornheiser podcast. Yeah. That'd be so funny. He's so funny.
We wouldn't put him on the Beltway for that, would we?
Oh, we'd put him right in front of Calvert Woodley.
Traffic and weather updates. Yeah.
He could call, he could keep the sign there all the time.
Sure.
Yeah.
So I have a 2 p.m. Call set up with young Scott. So we'll go over, find out if there's any paperwork involved or anything like that.
We don't want paperwork.
My only question to him is, are you one of the sons or the son that drove the Sands car
into the garage?
Into the garage.
Yeah, did you do that? Because
I think all Sands sons have had that.
If you drove it into the garage, you know, then he's certainly not, you know. I just went through an accident with my wife where they totaled the car. The insurance company totaled the car.
Yeah.
Now, what that means is,
I don't think the insurance company totaled the car. They declared it totaled.
They declared it totaled.
Yeah, no, they didn't actively total it.
Somebody else was behind the wheel.
I don't mean like they
got
the crash. I mean, they declared it totaled, a total loss.
Yes.
Because they just thought, well, the bill to fix it. This is amazing to me. Too small. You saw it.
Yes, it was.
Too small dents.
Seemed like very minor damage.
And they said it would cost $16,000 to fix.
Yeah.
Because of all the sensors and the air conditioning and the rail.
Yeah, that blew me away. Did not seem possible.
The airbag didn't deploy.
Yeah.
It didn't deploy. You were going less than 10 miles an hour. And they, anyway. So as a result of that, we had to buy a car. And this is, sorry, Carol
bought a car. We had to buy a car?
Huh?
We had to buy a car.
Carol, I had to buy a car. Carol, and this is an interesting factoid. Carol likes Jeeps. Likes Jeeps, wanted a Jeep. Another Jeep.
Wants to sit up high.
This would be her fourth Jeep. She wanted another Jeep. The other three have been new Jeeps. Okay. I've always bought new cars. I've always saved money to buy new cars. I have done that. New cars. I mean, I figure, why am I... My feeling always was, why am I taking someone else's car? I don't know what they did to the car.
Sure.
Why am I taking on that risk? But in my family, my daughter recently bought a used car. My wife, 2 days ago, bought a used car.
We've only purchased new used cars.
My son bought a used car, and you love that car.
Now, the caveat I would say is we've purchased two used cars, but we purchased them from the dealership, so they're going to be in, you know, good shape. And based on where we are, we want to get it with a certain mileage.
You got it from Mike Walker at BMW in Fairfax. And it's, what is it called?
The car that I'm driving?
No, the car for the family.
The Toyota Highlander.
It's really good, right? You love that car.
It's a family car. It's lovely. Yeah. We're not car people.
Right. So I'm...
And what's the stat they say? As soon as you drive a car off the lot, it's lost what percent?
I don't know, 50% or something like that.
Something ridiculous.
So Carol bought a used car because it's essentially the exact same car that she had before, but 2 years newer. Now, it's got about 30,000 miles. This is a small fact. One of the things that one of the people tried to sell us, and it's okay to try to sell you this because, you know, it's okay, was an 8-year or $100,000 mile warranty. And I pointed out to this person, my wife's in her mid-70s. She drives 2,000 miles a year.
I'll take the under on that.
We're not getting big use out of that. I said, let me tell you exactly how little she drives. The last car she had, the tires had dry rot because they never went anywhere. We had to replace all four tires, which is a big number.
Oh, yes.
That's a big number, all four tires.
Yep.
So I'm not looking at 100,000 or 8 years with this. So we declined that. I mean, you know, if you come back to me with 3 years, 30, okay, then we can talk. But 8 years, 100.
Yeah, we're not.
I mean, I don't even drive a lot of miles. I drive 6,000 miles a year. I don't go anywhere. I don't do anything. So we have this car, and Carol likes this car. And it's Oarsman Jeep. You know? So they've been around for 100 years.
Yeah, they have.
Oarsman, they got a million. Like Lindsay, they got a million
dealers. They're at the old Staples now, right?
Yes. That's exactly where it is, on the corner.
I hope they don't keep the cars
in the
parking lot.
On the corner of Wisconsin and Bradley.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I happen to know a couple of people in the Oarsman family.
Yeah, there's Staple around here.
One of them, John.
Staple, nice job there.
One of them, John, who's a very dear friend of the Socialite, had a bet with the Socialite that my ties are clip-on
ties. Clip-on, yes.
Clip-on ties. Ooh. And Alan said, why do you think that, John?
The classic Windsor knot.
And John said, because they're perfect. The knots are perfect. And so I met him the other day and I said, these are Windsor knots. Tell somebody to teach you how to tie a Windsor knot and it will always look perfect. And he's doing it now. So
now, my question
really
for you is, I think it's because of your height that your torso is the perfect length for a Windsor. Because whenever I've tried to tie that, which I do, I get that British schoolboy look where the tie comes up to my chest. Yeah.
Too short?
Yeah.
Yeah. So in other words, what you're saying is the more I shrink,
the more
better
you shrink.
It is.
You're in the sweet spot, so, but yeah, don't get
I'm
any shorter.
I'm down 2 inches. I'm 5'10". I'm 5'10". I'm down 2 inches.
I would say you're 3 or 4 off of program height, so yeah.
I'm down. All right. We'll take a break. When we come back, Chuck Culpepper will join us, talk about the men's Final Four, and then later in the show, Pammy Ward, women's Final Four. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
We're so happy when we get notes from our friend Michael Granberry. And he sent this. Had a cool thing happen the other night. I went to Poor David's Pub in Dallas to see a show by Grace Pettis and Robbie Hecht. They're Nashville songwriters whose music I've sent to the show. Grace in 2020, Robbie in 2023. But recently I learned that Grace and Robbie are now a couple. Might this spark a trend among other musical alumni of the Tony Kornheiser Show? The show is so good that Lula, the venue's house cat, chose to join them on stage, curling up on the rug next to Grace and Robbie at the intersection of voice and guitar. Speaking of, Robbie has a new album titled Not a Number. Its official release date is April 12th, which Michael Granberry says is his wife's birthday.
Oh.
So this is Robbie Hecht, and this is a song called I Can't Save You Anymore. And as with all people that Michael Granberry represents, they're better than everybody else.
It's just incredible.
Better than everybody else all the time. Plays in Chuck Culpepper, who is in Arizona, which is where the men's Final Four is taking place, technically Glendale. Wilbon would probably say it's North or South Glendale, as he's so involved in directional situations. I'll just start easy. I mean, I assume I'm speaking for everyone, including you, when I say what we're all really looking for is a UConn-Purdue final, right?
Yes, we are. And, you know, it's not always that you get it set up this way where you have the two teams that you want to see in the final. A lot of times, let's think of a year like 2004. We'll pull one out. First game was Georgia Tech, Oklahoma State. Second game was Connecticut, Duke. Everyone pretty much assumed the champion was coming out of that second semifinal, and it did.
Yeah.
Doesn't always end up that way, but it's kind of nice when you've got them in separate semifinals, so you can kind of think about if they get through, and I would really worry about NC State against Purdue, but if they do get through, that's going to be some, you know, Monday night show right there.
Yeah, because from about the third or fourth week of the season on, there were three teams that alternated at number one. Houston, which I always felt was the weakest of the three, and Purdue and UConn. And so if you get two number ones that are – and the fourth number one, by the way, in the seedings, North Carolina was lucky to get in. It's a combination of Arizona and Tennessee and other losses earlier in tournaments. And these two teams, UConn and Purdue, have been at the top of the board all season long. So we want that, which leads me, and I think you just alluded to it, to the next logical question. Which team has the better chance to upset one of the number ones, Alabama or NC State?
Well, I don't even know if anybody can beat NC State anymore. You know, it's like Matt Painter, the Purdue coach, was saying, we're not playing the team that went 17-14 until the start of the ACC tournament in Washington. We're playing the one that has gone 9-0 since then. I went back and looked at NC State's 9-0 run, and of course, it just shows you that within 3 weeks, a team can get a lot better, and confidence is such a factor, you know, when the players are this young and so on. And, you know, if you look way back to the beginning of that, they started with Louisville in the ACC tournament, which had, as we all know, just a wretched year.
Terrible, terrible.
And with 4:50 to go, they were tied 75-75. I just was trying to imagine what it was like in the arena at that point, only next of kin watching probably, and just, you know, just bleak. And to sit there and think, well, one of these teams is going to be in the Final Four would have been absurd.
Yeah, I mean, and I get that, and I understand why they're seeded 11th, but they're not an 11. A team from a major conference that goes through and wins its tournament is not an 11, right? But you have to give them an 11 because they were so mediocre prior to that, but they're not really an 11. I love the big kid Burns. What a load that kid is, right?
Yes, and the fact that he is a load makes his matchup with Zach Edey, who is Burns is 6'9 and 280.
Oh, whatever, he's over 300. He's over 300,
yeah.
That kid.
Yeah. Edey is 7 inches taller than he is. This is just crazy to think about, 6 or 7. And so that matchup, though, is, you know, it's, we thought we'd lost the big men and in life, and now we're rich in big men at this Final Four. And, you know, Kevin Keats, the NC State coach, is talking about how now everybody's going to go out and get a big man. That'll be the new trend, he said. And so, you know, we didn't expect to see this anymore. And I hear people complaining because Edey is boring. I don't see that at all. But, you know, I guess that's a reflection of where the game went and where Steph Curry took it so beautifully. And when everybody's shooting threes and longer threes, and Caitlin Clark, and that's where the game went. And now some people, I guess, are bored to see short hook shots and post moves.
Everybody expects you, if you're big, to be Wembanyama, but not everybody is Wembanyama. Zach Edey is a fabulous college player, tremendously effective. You mentioned the coach at NC State. Weren't they going to can that guy? Wasn't that out there?
I'm not sure that was coming this time, but I know it was in the air. It was maybe the first fumes of canning were starting to turn up. Yes, and because it was reaching that questionable zone where I'm not sure it was going to happen this spring, but you know, now it won't happen for at least several springs.
Yeah, I have to concede this. I don't want to see Alabama, NC State in the final. I mean, I don't. I know nothing of Alabama, though. Who are they?
So Alabama was the program that was the number one overall seed last year and had a giant controversy in that midst, a tragedy in that midst, where a player had, you know, that involvement with actually a murder. Not a suspect in it, but he brought a gun to a teammate, and you know, and it was talked about over that team the entire year. They reached the Sweet 16 in Louisville, and they run into San Diego State's defense, and they lose that by 7, and they're out. And people are grateful because they didn't want to get to the Final Four and, you know, have that just terrible, terrible, you know, story, and talk about that and sort of think about that at a time of, you know, Final Four of great joy and so on. So now they get to this year. They have this player, Mark Sears, from Alabama. They didn't know he was that good, so he went to Ohio University. Then he came back. He's second-team All-American, just wonderful. And they got through Grand Canyon, which played horribly but was quite a good team in the second round. And then one seed North Carolina in the third, and they got Clemson in the regional final. And so here they are with nobody paying much attention to them in the place where everybody thought they would be last year where everybody would have been paying attention to them.
So I had written that down, that they were involved last year, at least two players were involved and being talked of as accessories to a murder. I have not read one word about that this year. Is there some sort of agreement that nobody is going to ask about this? Has Nate Oates said, don't ask me about this? Has this come up at all, Chuck?
Not to my knowledge. They started in Spokane. I don't know if somebody asked there. But I think the key to that is that it's a almost entirely remade team.
Right.
And so I think that's the – Oates is probably the only connection, the athletic director, the only connections. You know, I mean, there are others who were on the team, but I think all the key figures have, you know, pretty much changed with that.
Do you expect is the wrong word. What would you think if Alabama beat UConn? Would you say, no, I don't think they're going to beat UConn. I don't.
I think they have very, very little chance. You know, I was thinking around the lines of 2%, 5%, something like that.
That's very low, yeah. Now, that's good to know. I like UConn. I don't know anybody on UConn, but I like UConn. I had written this down as a note. Big East, ACC, Big Ten, SEC, any questions? Right? I mean, this is like, it's in essence, I'm saying, just spare me this talk about mid-majors. Just stop. Leave me alone. Everybody in this thing, two of them are from devoted basketball conferences, the Big East and the ACC. The Big Ten is a good basketball conference. The SEC has not been a good basketball conference because it's a great football conference, but they've done, in the last 15 years, they've done a lot better. These are the best conferences. The Big 12, stop, leave me alone, and leave me alone about mid-majors, as so many people crusade for, because this is the final four you're supposed to have, right?
Well, this upholds a kind of this hypothesis that came up last year when the Final Four had UConn, and then it had Miami from the ACC, but then it had FAU and San Diego State, and people were saying, it was almost this thing of, you know, we love our upsets. It's one of the foremost reasons we love this event, but we don't want too many of them. You can make your upsets, please, but then please stop.
Yes.
When we get to the Sweet 16.
Get out. Yes.
And get out and leave, and we were glad to have you. Thanks. But in our Final Four, we would like more empires.
Yeah, so. I mean, that's pretty much how I feel. You can sneak one in there. Last year, there were too many. Last year, I thought something was wrong because Florida Atlantic and San Diego State were there. You know what I mean? I thought something was wrong. If you get George Mason or St. Peter's, and it's a really good story, but when you start loading up with these guys, then you think, something's off with this. Do you have a winner in your head in this? Do you have something you think will happen?
I was thinking what you said. If you have Sister Jean holding a press conference on Friday, but then you have Villanova, Kansas, and Michigan, that's sort of like the right amount.
Yeah.
But not, we don't want too much of it. And I think UConn has just been sort of the secretariat of this whole thing for 2 years now. Nobody's lost to them by fewer than 13 points across these 10 games in two tournaments. I think they're a decided favorite, even though, you know, Edie in the middle and the way Purdue is playing, perhaps even playing more loosely after finally getting to the Final Four after 44 years. I think, but I still think UConn will be a decided favorite on Monday night if that happens.
Yeah, me too. Thank you, Chuck. Enjoy it. We'll talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Tony. Thank you.
Chuck Culpepper, boys and girls. We'll take a break. Pam Ward, when we return, I'm Tony Kornheiser.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Liquid IV read. Whether you hydrate to live or live to hydrate, Liquid IV quenches your thirst faster than water alone. With three times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, plus eight vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness, all in a single sugar-free stick. Nigel, you do this. You hike and you take this.
Yes. In fact, this past weekend, I went for a 14-mile hike. And
wow.
Yes, which is insane.
Wow, you're nuts.
It's a little insane. But the first thing I do before I start out is I put a stick of the Liquid IV into a bottle of water, and it sets you up. And then when I get to sort of the turning around point, have another for the walk back. It's brilliant. I cannot recommend this stuff highly.
Turning around point for me would be where you call the cab. One stick of Liquid IV, when added to 16 ounces of water, hydrates better than water alone. It has three times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink. It has no artificial sweeteners, zero sugar, and it's non-GMO. It's free from gluten, dairy, and soy, so Eric Rideholm will happily have it. However you hydrate, grab your Liquid IV, hydration multiplier sugar-free, in bulk nationwide at Costco, or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use the code TONYK at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using the promo code TONYK at liquidiv.com. Use the code, people.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Once again, sent to us by Michael Granberry. This is Robbie Hecht. This is a song called Old Radio. The first song we played was I Can't Save You Anymore, and this is Old Radio. Lovely voice. Michael, if people like Robbie Hecht want to have their original music played here, how do they do it?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
Okay, so Pam Ward is going to join us in about 35 seconds, because I'm going to take 35 seconds to talk about her. When we started doing radio in 1992, were you on with us in 1992, or were you on shortly thereafter?
No, I was with you. I think I was with you on your very first show at WTEM.
Okay, so that's 1992. That's Memorial Day weekend, or right after that in 1992. And of course, I love Pam, and Pam will always be a kid to me. Now, Pam's not a kid anymore. No, I'm not a kid. Nobody's a kid anymore, because it's a long time ago. But Pam will always be a kid to me. I haven't talked to her in ages. I haven't, but I am always so proud when I hear you, because I know your voice, and then see you do a game, because you always wanted to do play-by-play, and you got to that point. That's good, right? You must feel good about that.
Yeah, it's literally, ever since I was a little kid, that's all I wanted to do. So, yes, it's worked out, and I've been at ESPN full-time now for 27 years. So, it's been a fun job.
I'm glad. Yeah. I'm glad. Mm-hmm. I'm glad. It makes me happy. You've seen all the teams that are in the Final Four. Have you done all their games or just two or three of their games?
I have called games for three of the four teams, multiple games for UConn and NC State and South Carolina, and I've watched pretty much all of Iowa's games, and I had them several times last year.
So I'm very familiar. Yeah, you saw Caitlin Clark play live. You called those games.
Yes.
I started watching her games this year. I probably watched 7 or 8 of her games. When you see her play in a live circumstance, if you've done a game at Iowa, for example, where they're packed to the rafters, what's that like?
Oh man, it's the most amazing atmosphere you'd ever want to be. I think is at Carver Hawkeye Arena when she plays. And I did the Big Ten tournament last year. It was in Target Center, and it was full, and it was like 90% Iowa fans, and that's the loudest and best atmosphere I've ever been in. And they beat the heck out of Ohio State. It wasn't even competitive. And just to see her play in person, I mean, there are times when you can't speak because she's that good. And she's the best women's basketball player I've ever seen, period.
Wow. Wow, I mean, I always thought the best one I'd ever seen was Diana Taurasi.
I still have to deal with Diana. Diana's great, but Taurasi or Caitlin Clark, as great as she is as a shooter, I think she might be a better passer. I've never seen anybody able, and you've seen it, she can throw from the backcourt, from the slash line, a bounce pass with velocity and touch, and get it to the right person at the right spot at the right time. She's just remarkable.
So I told some people I know that I text back and forth with, you know, I said, I'm watching this and I'm watching that, and they began to watch her as well. And And they talk about how great she is, but they also say, boy, she complains a lot. And I said, yeah, she thinks she's fouled on every single time she goes to the basket. She thinks she's fouled and she raises her arms up. I find myself sort of liking that. You know, I like that for her. And I like it from Angel Reese. I like it from players who say, hey, I got hit here. What do you think of that?
Well, she does. I've seen, well, speaking, that's like a Taurasi thing to do, too.
Oh.
But she does get beaten up a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And she is, you know, I think she's trying to calm that down a little bit. First of all, I think she is hit a lot. But I think there's also some certain standards that women's basketball players do, and they're labeled whiners and things like that. I you know, they're expected, I think, to act in a certain way. And she's... she reminds me a lot of Taurasi, temperament-wise, but she's dialed down from what Taurasi does. So yeah, I don't have any problem with it. But I've talked to a lot of people too, and they're like, "Well, she's just a whiner." But I don't think so. I don't think it's over the top.
I wrote a note that she rises to the moment like Magic and Bird. Mm. I am not saying she's as good a player as Magic. I'm not saying anything like that. But I'm saying this is what you expect from stars. Stars are supposed to, when the light is brightest, they are supposed to be at their best, right? And don't you find that with her?
I think it's remarkable what she has done with all of the eyes on her and all of the pressure and all of the blowback and all the stuff from what happened against LSU last year in the championship game. And she's getting 40-point games in the NCAA tournament without even blinking, it seems. She's under pressure. It doesn't seem to bother her. It almost seems to uplift her. And I talked to her head coach, Lisa Bluter, last week in Albany at the regional. And that's, I think, maybe the most impressive thing is how she's handled all of this. I mean, I was staying at the same hotel in Albany with Iowa, and it was like, you know, old reference when the Beatles came to town, mm-hmm. or when Taylor Swift is in town. I mean, there's extra security. There are fans all over the place. It's really quite remarkable, and she's handled it very well.
Gino Auriemma says Paige Beckers is the best player in America. You would say that's not right, right?
I would say she's second best right now. And there's other great, great players out there. Juju Watkins for USC is one of them. There's so much talent now in the women's game, but and you know, Paige plays for Gino.
Yeah, so, I'm supposed to say
but
that.
But, yeah, I still think just all around, and Beckers is an incredible, she's really crafty, and maybe she's definitely more versatile offensively, even though Caitlin can attack the rim now very well. I think it's the passing, really, that separates Caitlin.
So that's the game. Sadly for me, that's the really late game. I'm not going to make it. I know I'm not going to make it. But when UConn plays Iowa, and I've watched Iowa a lot. I haven't watched anybody else a lot. So my criticisms are about Iowa. They don't play any defense at all. They don't box out anybody. They get killed on the offensive glass. And their job in their minds clearly is, we're going to put up 95, and let's see if you can. Right? Do I have that right?
Well, they play some defense. They play some zone. They do like to score, obviously, and they're one of the best scoring teams they have been in the country since they've gotten Caitlin. But yeah, it's a concern, rebounding, things like that. But this is a team, remember, that beat South Carolina last year in the Final Four when South Carolina was unbeaten.
Right.
And there are players around Caitlin Clark. Kate Martin, I think, is somebody who's totally underrated and not recognized for what she can do. It's basically Caitlin and four really good role players. But yeah, it's everything certainly revolves around her. But they'll play some defense. But yeah, good luck. Did you see the LSU game?
Yeah.
Last week? I don't know what Kim Mulkey was thinking by having Haley Van Lith try to guard Caitlin. And I felt badly for Haley, who, by the way, went into the transfer
portal
again.
Boom! She wants out. She says, I'm not going through this again. I'm out.
One and done. So she'll be going somewhere else next year. Yeah.
Thank you a little while ago mentioning South Carolina. They're a juggernaut. I can't see NC State beating them. I can't see anybody on the other side beating them either, especially since last year Iowa beat them. I would have to think that South Carolina is a prohibitive favorite in your mind, or no?
Yes, they are the best team that is there, but they have shown some vulnerabilities lately. They almost lost the SEC championship game.
Right.
They were Tennessee, Camila Cardoza, who's 6'7 and quite good, desperation three at the buzzer, and it went in. It's the only three that she's attempted all year. And I had them in Albany and against Oregon State, and they have a tendency. They've blown some leads. They can, you know, and I think this is true, they can beat themselves. I think to beat South Carolina, they have to make mistakes, and they don't hold on to leads. Sometimes they're not careful with the basketball. They don't get Cardozo enough touches at times. And they have 10 players that are really good, and I think that's a blessing and a curse. And sometimes there are players in there that maybe shouldn't, not to criticize Dawn's substitution patterns, but there's so many players that rotate in and out, I think sometimes it hurts them as far as trying to get into a groove.
12.3 million people watched that game, LSU and Iowa. 12.3 million. The highest prior to that was 9.9 million. This is a huge leap up. What did you make of that?
Well, first of all, it's fantastic, and it's and numbers have been, and it's not just, it's the Caitlin Clark factor to a degree, yeah. But our research department is showing that non-Caitlin Clark games are rating 75% higher than last year, which also is significant. I just think it's the visibility, the buzz around these players, and again, it's not just Caitlin. There's some other really good players, and the level of basketball has grown leaps and bounds just in the last few years. But I think it's, and you're hearing people who were, not just non-women's basketball fans, but people who are just like middling sports fans who are getting on board.
Yeah, but I think they're brought there by Caitlin Clark. I mean, mm-hmm. I think this is a 2 to 3 year run by a very specific person with very specific skills. And so I would ask you, does it shrink when she goes to the WNBA? Does that shrink?
I think the Iowa viewership might shrink. But again, the numbers for the other games, Beckers will be back. But that's a concern, is what happens when the stars aren't there. But
yeah.
There are more and more stars coming in. And you know what it's going to do? It's going to get WNBA numbers up. Because wherever Caitlin played on the road this year, they sold out. They sold out the entire Comcast Center at Maryland, which, you know, the whole thing, which is, you know, 17,000 people or so. And I think that's going to have a carryover into the WNBA, so it's just going to elevate all of women's basketball.
Why do you think she's going to the WNBA now? She could spend another year in Iowa. She clearly makes millions of dollars from national commercials. She's a godlike figure in college basketball. And she's a thin, relatively small player, and it's going to be hard for her in that pro league. Why do you think she's going now?
Well, I think it's the perfect time. I think she's accomplished just about all she can, short of a national championship.
Right.
She is 6 feet tall. She's taller, I think, in person than when you see her on TV. And she's actually gained quite a bit of muscle. She's gained like 20 pounds of muscle,
really?
Since her freshman or sophomore year. She's a skinny little thing.
Right.
When she came in. But this is the perfect time for her. All of her teammates, except for one, Hannah Stolke, who is a post player, they're all leaving. They're Kate Martin and Gabby Marshall. These kids came back to use their COVID year, if you will, their fifth year of eligibility. So it's going to be, Iowa's going to be down next year. And I don't know. I just think it's the right time for her to go. Because they're not going to be, quite frankly, they're not going to be as good next year. But I don't know if that would factor in her decision. But I think she's, you know, kind of been to the mountaintop, and she's ready for the next thing. And there's been a misconception about the NIL money. She is making, as you said, millions of dollars. Those endorsements are not going to go away when she goes to the WNBA.
Unless she's terrible after 2 years.
Unless she's terrible. And
right.
I don't think she's going to be terrible. And she's going to be targeted. You know, rookies always kind of have to prove themselves, and no one ever has ever gone in the league with this much attention. But I think she's going to be a really good pro. I do. I think, and she's still a kid, and she's still going to put on some muscle. She's still going to continue to grow. I think she's a decent defender, underrated as a defender. But it's going to be interesting to see the transition. But I think she's going to be a starter from day one. I think she's that good.
It's a joy for me to hear you. This makes me very happy.
It makes me happy too, Tom.
Good. All right. Thank you, Pammy.
You're very welcome. Take care.
Pam Ward, boys and girls. We'll take a break. We will come back with email and jingle. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Blue Nile read. Getting engaged is special for so many reasons. You get to plan the perfect proposal, celebrate the love you've built so far, and look forward to the love you'll build for the rest of your lives. The only part that's not so special? Shopping for an engagement ring if you don't know what you're doing, and that's where BlueNile.com comes in. BlueNile.com is the original online jeweler. Since 1999, they've helped millions of couples create their perfect engagement ring. They're committed to ensuring that the highest ethical standards are observed when sourcing diamonds and jewelry. And don't worry, your secret is safe. Every Blue Nile order is insured and arrives in packaging that won't give away what's inside. Yeah, because you don't want a package that says diamond ring for you. Gary Lewis and the Playboys, this diamond ring doesn't shine for me anymore. You don't want that. And Blue Nile offers a 100% satisfaction guarantee with guaranteed free shipping and returns. Right now, you can get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more with the code TONYK at BlueNile.com. That's $50 off with code TONYK at BlueNile.com. Once again, BlueNile.com.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
World champion whistler from Binghamton, New York, Chris Ullman. Happy for him.
World champion.
Yeah, he's got a book out and everything, you know. He's written a book about famous people he's known, something like that.
That's fabulous.
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
What chapter does it get to whistling?
No, I don't know. I mean, to me, if I was Chris Ullman writing a book, it would be about whistling and how to whistle and why I'm so good at whistling and you are not so good at whistling. Anyway, want to do the Bethesda Bagel ad?
Yes, Bethesda Bagels. We love them.
Audiobook, maybe.
Audiobook, yes. Bethesda Bagels, we love them. You will as well. Just go to BethesdaBagels.com for the location in the D.C. area nearest you. Then pop on in, my friend, and you will be thrilled.
That does it for us today. Before we get to the mailbag, let me just say, little GTO, you know you're looking fine. Three deuces and a four-speed and a 389. Listen to her tacking up now. Listen to her whine. Come on, turn it up. Wind it up. Blow it out, GTO. Ronnie and the Daytonas. Nigel cannot get this song out of his head now.
Nope.
Ronnie and the Daytonas. I'm sure it's their only hit.
Has to be, right?
I can't imagine they had another hit. I just don't think they did. Thank you to our guests today, Chuck Culpepper and Pam Ward. Thanks as well to today's sponsors. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Odyssey. Get the show on Apple. Please leave us a review. From Carl in Oswego, New York, upstate New York. Just a reminder that the eclipse is coming Monday, peaking around 3:20 p.m. Looks like D.C. will experience about 87% coverage, but still not enough for you to safely look at it without your eclipse glasses. Here along Lake Ontario, we're going to have over 3 minutes of totality. Oof. Where we can actually look up at the sun and moon. Here's hoping you have clear skies and it gets dark enough to see some stars. Okay. So, Nigel, you have to get the glasses.
Yes, I'm tasked with that.
Your job is to get the glasses, free glasses for all of us.
Free glasses.
And you're in a situation, you got...
We're getting the orders of the school. Yeah. This is right at pickup time.
Right.
Do not look directly at
my eyes.
No, you can't let young kids do that. They'll go blind.
Yeah.
You know, you can't let them do that. John Pearson in Milwaukee. So last night I was minding my own business when I found a dead rodent in our basement. I learned from you that the toilet is not the proper means to dispose of it. My question is that if I had tried to do so and it did not go down the bowl, would I have then flushed the mouse in my effort to flush the mouse? I think so. That's probably true.
Meta.
Josh Cromwell, Moselle, Mississippi, our old friend. For those who may not be as steeped in the lore of this show, flushing the mouse is the necessary precursor to ensure that you don't end up with the old dead rat in the mouth like those retirees in Boca. Boca Raton.
That's right.
Mouth of the rat.
Yes.
And that's what it means. James Rivera, love the show, but I need some clarification. When you actually flush the mouse, you did it in a panic. At least that's how I understood it. But now I see flush the mouse as being used for any situation where someone messes up, panic or not. For example, if a kicker misses the game-winning field goal, I would say flush the mouse. But if a kicker misses a field goal in the first quarter, I wouldn't say that's a flush the mouse situation. I would say he just missed. What would you say?
Yes. Yeah. Context.
I think that's fair. Yes. Context is important.
Okay.
But I want to say I didn't flush the mouse in a panic.
No.
I flushed it because I thought that's what I was supposed to do. It was only later that everyone in my family and household told me what I did was
wrong. The socialite said flushing the mouse is the appropriate response.
That's, you know, I didn't. It was very small. Very small. From Mo from the Hammer, Ontario.
Hammer?
The official cash-only parking lot owner. Cash-only, I love that.
That's a great
I'm surprised
gig.
No one mentioned where your actual mail went. The most logical was that it must have been raining that day, because if you remember the episode of Seinfeld, Newman the postman doesn't deliver when it rains. So I predict it was sitting in the locker with all the other mail until the weather turned nicer. As predicted, the mail started to suddenly reappear. Mm-hmm. Likely story. All checks have been cashed.
Well, this is great news.
All checks, all six that were involved in this alleged drop-off in the post office in Rehoboth.
You're welcome.
On March 11th, and today is what, April 5th?
April 5th.
All had been cashed, you know, by the end of last week. So I feel really good about that.
Yeah, that's a win.
From Patrick Graham in Catonsville, Maryland. I experienced something last night I think illustrates just how far apart the current up-and-coming generations and older generations are when it comes to banking. Like Mr. Tony, I still write checks occasionally, but I do know how. I pay most of my bills automatically online. I did take the time to teach my children how to write a check, though. I doubt any of them have. But last night really threw me for a loop. I went to a local popular carryout to pick up some chicken salad for my wife for lunch the next day. The girl behind the counter said if I was asked if I was paying cash or charge. I handed her a 20 and said, cash, please. Here's where things went south. She stared at the bill, smiled, and said, 1 minute, please. She turned to a coworker and said, it's cash. Oh, let me show you how to do that, was the reply. It must be a new employee, I thought, learning how to ring that cash sale. I was shocked when the more experienced coworker said, okay, his change is $12.58. Those two big coins are 25 cents each, so that's 50. When you get eight with a nickel, that's worth 5 cents, and three of these pennies, they're 1 cent each. That adds up to 58. Then give him a $10 bill and two $1 bills. She handed the change to the new girl, and she handed it to me. She smiled and said, sorry, I never use cash. Are schools not teaching this basic life skill anymore? I remember the days of Rose Magdalene at St. Jude's Rockville going over coins and dollar bills for weeks until we had it mastered. At last, I've come to the conclusion that old people have been saying for years, youngsters don't know the value of a dollar or a quarter or a nickel. We're all doomed. Are you teaching your sons?
Bootsy has a placemat that could help with this situation. Now imagine if instead of giving the 20, you gave a couple of ones in there to get a round number back. That would throw them.
I do that all the time.
Yeah, that's an old school move.
I do that all the time. Are you kidding me that someone working in a fast food joint?
Terrifying.
It doesn't know how to do cash? Doesn't know what a quarter is?
Right. What do these bills represent?
What? From our friend Joe Farrell in Olney, Maryland, the A's announced they'll play the 2025, 2026, and 2027 seasons at Sutter Health Park in West Sacramento, not to be confused with West Eckveld. The park capacity is 14,000. The A's will only need a third of that. Think Daniel Snyder still has that upper deck tarp in his garage? Maybe Danny can donate it to the A's for another tax deduction.
Oh, the party deck.
From Papa Thiam in Paris in France, the gentleman writing from his China vacation spot had one crucial omission in his list of great walls. He left out the most prestigious one of them all, the Chatter Art Wall.
From
Jason Bullitt, Chuck and Roxy episode 31. Wow. Saratoga County, New York. Who says, please tell Bill LaHecca to eat it. He goes, after you casually said the first verse of Shutdown by Jan and Dean towards the end of Wednesday's show, I had a David Aldridge moment when I said to myself, I know that song. When I was an early adolescent, my dad had a compilation album of famous car songs from Car and Driver magazine on cassette. This is how long ago it was, old sport. And one of the songs was Shutdown. You briefly mentioned Little GTO by Ronnie and the Daytonas. It was on that album, too. Of course it was. Brian Wilson either wrote or inspired every one of these songs.
Yes.
Safe to say nobody flushed the mouse back then when it came to selections, as I enjoyed listening to the album, either with my parents or by myself. Sure, of course. Kevin Korn, Seattle, Washington. Formerly Hershey, Pennsylvania, who encloses a picture with me, obviously, in Chatter. I lived in Hershey for 2.5 years when I was working in an underground mine for my first job out of college. A mine worker. My grandparents even honeymooned at the Hershey Hotel. On my commutes home, as I neared Hershey Park, I distinctly remembered the smell of peanuts, not the smell of chocolate, as the Reese's cups were still made in Hershey. Oh, right. I would say that the current best thing in Hershey is not the park, but Tregg's or Trogue's Brewery. Great beer, and yes, still plenty of tattoos to see. Reese's Cups are fabulous.
Yes, they are.
I mean, they're simply fabulous. Yeah. Come on now. I had to half of one last night. I limited myself to half.
That's
you don't want to eat too many.
That's good self-control.
You go crazy. From Dave C. in Birdsboro, Pennsylvania. Do you know where that is?
I do not.
Living in southeastern Pennsylvania. Well, southeastern Pennsylvania is the Philadelphia area, basically. Somewhere between Philly and Reading, the part of Pennsylvania that James Carville refers to as Alabama. I frequently have to drive to places like Philly, Hershey, Harrisburg, Allentown, and even Pittsburgh for my job. I recently got a bad haircut, mostly because I always go with the cheapest haircut and stick a Phillies hat on top of it. When another little wrote to you about the sign saying Barber College, I yelled at my empty car and dashboard, "I know that sign." Having stumbled onto the sign during my journeys, I resisted assuming it was simply advertising an actual barber college or suggesting it as a career for the I'm out of options types. Instead, I reacted defensively as if the sign knew that my haircut was bad and was implying that I got the cut from a freshman at a barber college. That may or may not be the case. None of your business, sign. But I was proud of myself for responding to the sign without hesitation. Eat it. Speaking of barber colleges, years ago when my son wanted to talk about future colleges, he would start the conversation by asking about one school or another. Borrowing from The Simpsons, I would always react with the same college. College? Barber or clown? To this day, he recounts these occasions bitterly, implying that I wasn't taking it seriously. Still, I hope that when he advances to my age and has children of his own who are contemplating college, he'll think of me as that gosh darn genius that I am when he repeats the same Simpson reference. It's a wonderful, just a wonderful, wonderful email.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I mean, Hershey, Pennsylvania, the Hershey Hotel that Sally was in, I've stayed in that hotel. That is one of the historic hotels in America. There's a list of maybe 100 or 500 or something like that, historic hotels in America. And the Hershey Hotel is one of them. Wow. It's a lovely hotel. Glenn Winters, Newport News, Virginia. I can't help observing that in one podcast, you sing the praises of your daily cup of decaf from Trade Coffee, while in another, you mention having snacked on chocolate-covered espresso beans. You're treading water in the old caffeine pool. Yeah, I know. I shouldn't do that because I shouldn't have caffeine. Also, I have to admit that the reception for my fugue on the mailbag jingle has far exceeded my expectations. I light up every time I hear it on your high-quality pod. My wife and daughter, on the other hand, they're over it. That's Glenn Winters. Yes. This is Glenn Winters himself.
The fugue, man.
From Gary Pitts in Knoxville, Tennessee. I'm a little behind on the pod, but in catching up, you know, they all call it the pod. I call it the podcast, but everybody, Bill Simmons calls it the pod when he talks to me about it.
That's what the cool kids say.
I'm a little bit, is that right?
I'm
a little behind on the pod,
show.
But in catching up, I think I finally had my David Aldrich moment. A couple of weeks ago, as you talked about the time change, you mentioned the West Texas town of El Paso, and as you do, immediately broke into the Marty Robbins classic. I exclaimed to myself out loud, I know that song. More specifically, I know that guitar. Years ago, working as a journalist for an NPR affiliate, I was doing research for an upcoming series we produced to commemorate what would have been Bill Monroe's 100th birthday. Worry not, I've started my research for your commemoration as well. I learned through one of my professors that George Grun of Nashville, a world-renowned luthier, what? Let's look up luthier. I bet that has something to do with string instruments. A world-renowned luthier is a Bill Monroe expert and thus should be consulted. We set up the meet and drove down to conduct interviews. George decided the quietest place to record was in the large room that houses his personal instrument collection. And during that session, he walked over to the wall and picked up a 1923 Gibson F5 mandolin. Well, Bill Monroe's mandolin is housed at the Country Music Hall of Fame. George informed me that the one in his hand was one digit off from the serial number of Monroe's, and thereby the one that came off the line just before Bill's fabled instrument. He grabbed a pick and started playing. My professor reached over and grabbed Maybelle Carter's guitar and joined in. George nodded to my right, indicating that I should grab the guitar sitting next to me and join in as well. So that was the day I got to play Marty Robbins' guitar. We played music and enjoyed refreshments for the next hour. At one point, I sat my drink down on the surface next to me and started in on another song. Mr. Grun immediately stopped playing, looked at me, and said, "Do you mind putting your beverage down on the floor? That's Buddy Holly's amp." I realized I really flushed the mouse on that one. I'd ask if I could be the official guy who played Marty Robbins' guitar, but I'd imagine that post is held by Mr. Robbins himself. Thanks for years of entertainment and laughs. That's Gary Pitts in Knoxville, Tennessee. These are two great emails today.
Yeah.
These are two great emails.
By the way, do you want luthier?
Yeah, is it something to do with string instruments?
A craftsperson who builds or repairs string instruments that have a neck and a sound
How
box.
How smart am I?
Believe you got that.
Right? You know? It's not Luthier Vandross.
No, it's not.
No, it's not Lex Luthier.
No.
No, it's not. From Rich Brazow, I hope I pronounced that correctly, Rich Brazow, who's at Second Nine Golf. Well, I'm sure you're
golf
aware
consultant.
Of the upcoming AJGA event at Rehoboth Beach at the end of the month, since you won't be able to play in the morning that weekend. I am aware of it because Darryl Clark's son is going to play in it, And he asked me, have you, Michael, did you play in AJGA events?
AJGA would be aspirational junior golf tournaments. I played in some qualifiers, yes.
Yeah, I mean, you try for it. But this is going to be at Rehoboth. It's going to be at my golf course.
Get into their star system early, because the stars do a lot of work for you as you get into the 15, 16, 17 age group.
I just didn't, I mean, I guess I won't go to the beach that weekend.
Probably not.
If all these kids are playing.
Oh, are you not going to be the keynote speaker?
No one has asked me. I'll be heading up on Friday, April 26th to do an event for the players and parents on College Golf Guide. If Michael was anything like me, he wore out the old Ping College Golf Guide back in the day. I'll drop an old copy in your locker for a PTI shout-out. I thought it would be fun if you came out and did a little... I thought it would be fun if you came out and did a little open for me to loosen the room up. A few jokes.
How about Tony
maybe
from the
some
trap?
Trivia against the kids. Drop some Johnny O promo codes, whatever you'd like. You could take me over to Casa de Leo after for dinner. The least I can do is spring for some Candy Kitchen for dessert. If you can't make it, just drop me a note with your address and where the key is. I'll keep the showers to a brisk 18 to 20 minutes. In all seriousness, very cool of the club to host an event like this on a weekend. It's what makes these junior tours go. It's another great email. It's a great email. Second Nine Consulting.
Yep.
Are you familiar with
him? Yeah, I've been emailing with him.
Oh.
He left us a hat at Chichesi about 5 years ago.
Oh. Well, I, of course, have
no memory.
Nicky
left you
of,
a bottle of liquor.
I have no memory of anything, as you know. But isn't that wonderful?
Yes, that's a great job by the club.
Should I go? Well, so George said nothing will be involved. Pat will be involved.
No, George said nothing if he's not taking a day off like he was last Saturday.
You can't let him take a day off on a big event.
No.
But could they maybe get reciprocity from me somewhere else?
You want to go play Kings Creek?
Yeah, yeah. Sure.
That sounds like
good. Are you listening? Eddie Brown, are you listening? Can we go play Kings Creek? If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
But I still need a bit of milk, full fat, which I've warmed in the microwave.
Brushing your hair out of your eyes, watching you grip in your pillow. You're running away somewhere inside where I cannot go. I can't save you anymore. You won't let me in like you let me before. I've spent all of my time trying to be your alibi, but I can't save you anymore. I can't save you anymore. Keep it in dry. Yesterday I would have followed. Closing the door, you wave one last time, and I don't wanna go. I can't save you. You let me before. I spent all of my time trying to be your alibi, but I can't save you anymore. I can't save you Just give it some time, and it'll all be just fine. I can't save you anymore. You won't let me in like you let me before. I've spent all of my time wish I had someone I could lay quiet for, but instead I'd slide in a tape and wait till they played my favorite song. I would hit record and then it was mine. Fly when you